be speaking today. They are at different stages of motherhood. And the first one will be Laura, who's going to come and give a tribute to her mom. Unfortunately, May is not able to be with us today, but I'm sure she'll be listening to the message later on. And then Colleen will come to speak to us on prayer and motherhood. And then Bev will come and share what she learned about trusting God with her children. So I'm just going to ask Laura if you will come. You could come up here if you choose, or if you want to speak from down there, that's fine as well. Thanks, Laura.
Well, hello. This is kind of weird for me. Anyways, my name is Laura, and my mom is May. She's not here today, but you may know her as the one usually zipping around in the back, making sure that there's enough coffee and goodies for all of us. I would like to share with you a few things I've learned from her over the years. The first thing is to work hard. My mom is very industrious. Ever since a young age, she has had to work hard in the family business, as well as raise four daughters with my dad. Today, she is very involved with church ministries, serving as deacon, head of the fellowship committee, being a part of the worship team, and managing her own travel business, where she's known to work until 4 a.m., sometimes later, in the morning. In fact, she and my dad stayed up regularly every week to bring scrumptious gourmet meals for alpha classes here. Number two, play hard. My mom is a known party animal. She loves a good party with great food and fellowship, as she's a pro at throwing parties. She always ensures her guests never go home unstuffed. Having said that, there are always lots of delicious leftovers, which leads me to number three, don't waste. Especially when it comes to food. My mom comes from humble beginnings, so wasting food is an absolute no-no. An unintended consequence of this is I've eaten foods past their expiration date and I'm stronger today because of it. Although I have to say, and she wants me to say that my mom spoils her, which is true. Though after taking the food safe course at church, she knows better now, so don't worry. Number four, never pay regular price. Nothing pleases my mom more than finding a good bargain, which is why I think she excels in her travel business, as well as ensuring she doesn't go over the budget when buying food for the church. Number five, laugh often. My mom is constantly laughing. It's within this framework of humor where she teaches us not to take life so seriously, but instead to take a step back and see it all in context, to trust God, because God had us all figured out. And then we don't worry, and then, you know, we don't lose joy in the present. Number six, love family. We all have hard to get along with family members, yet my mom is fiercely loyal to her family. She is the glue that keeps our family and extended families together. She has ministered to people within the church and within the family, visiting people and praying for people despite leading a very busy life, which leads me to number seven, be generous. My mom has a very big heart for people, and she's generous with others with her time and resources. When I was learning how to drive, my mom was willing to get into a car with me behind the wheel, sacrificing her life to teach me how to drive. My dad was a little bit more hesitant. Number eight, encourage others. My mom has always been an encourager. I'm a math high school teacher, but my mom has always been very supportive of my art career since I was a young girl drawing on the walls at home. Because of her encouragement, I was fortunate enough to have been published in the province newspaper for 4 months a couple years ago. And I'll show you some cartoons later. The last thing here is number nine, God first. My mom has experienced a lot of hardships in her life, stuff that I hope I'll never see. Yet she's overcome them all because of the strength she draws from God. I think she learned this from her own mom, who was a Christian and triumphed over poverty, illiteracy, abuse, three husbands who all predeceased her. One of the biggest testimonies of her faithfulness comes from her praying for my father daily when he was going through a major period of transition and he was not attending church. You wouldn't know it today because my dad is very active in church and he's demonstrated the transforming power and impact God has in our lives. So to recap, work hard. Play hard, don't waste, never pay regular price, laugh often, love family, be generous, encourage others, and God first. So in conclusion, I just want to show a couple cartoons I've done for Mother's Day for a couple years ago. So I guess this was in the province a couple years ago. And I don't know if the bottom was there. Oh. My mom's not known to be a good cook. It's my dad who does the cooking. But she's she's known for her humor, so this is why I drew this one. This was last year. I just thought, moms are busy, right? And not really that funny, but okay. And then this is the one I just did last night for this year. I hope you can read that. Happy Mother's Day. That's it. Thank you.
Good morning. If you don't know me, I'm Colleen Fuller. And before I start, I realized that more than half of you who are here are not mothers. And so it's okay, I'm not just talking to mothers. There's things in here for you as well. I want to talk about what I learned about prayer from being a mother. When I was a young woman, I loved to pray. I enjoyed spending time with God, feeling His presence, seeing Him answer prayers. Then I got married and I had less time and a whole new batch of things to pray about. As we got used to married life, to putting each other first and taking on adult responsibilities. But nothing in my life has taught me more about prayer than being a mom. I prayed for my children before they ever came into existence. I prayed for God to guide the timing of their arrivals and to pick out the right little souls for us to love. And He did. I prayed for them when they were developing inside me, but really I started to seriously pray for them when they were born. And like all the best prayers, I began with praise and worship. I was overwhelmed with love for my babies and amazement at the miracle of new life. And it overflowed into heartfelt praise and gratitude to God. To paraphrase Psalm 139, I praised Him because they were fearfully and wonderfully made. And then the reality set in. The nurses at St. Paul's Hospital, they made sure to check that we had a good car seat before they sent us home with Tess. But they never even asked if we knew how to raise a child. It seemed like they were being terribly irresponsible to send us out of there with someone so precious and vulnerable. There's a story in the Bible that you might not connect with motherhood. It goes like this, Matthew 14, 25. Shortly before dawn, Jesus went out to them walking on the lake. When the disciples saw Him walking on the lake, they were terrified. "It's a ghost," they said, and cried out in fear. But Jesus immediately said to them, "Take courage, it is I, don't be afraid." "Lord, if it's you," Peter replied, "tell me to come to you on the water." "Come," he said. Then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water, and came toward Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, cried out, "Lord, save me!" Immediately, Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. When God invited me to become a parent, it was a lot like being invited to walk on water. I had never tried it before. I definitely didn't know how to do it. It felt pretty life and death to get it right. And obviously, it took very little time before I felt the waters closing in over my head. But Peter demonstrates exactly how to pray in these situations. "Lord, save me," or as I tend to think of it, "Lord, help," is one of the most profound and useful prayers in the Bible. It acknowledges our helplessness, draws the attention of the Almighty God to our need, and expresses our trust in Him to rescue us. It's short and simple enough that you can pray it while you run to provide first aid. You can remember it even when you're terrified because your baby's fever has gone over 104 and she's limp and unresponsive. You can say it for yourself when you're struggling to control your anger because parents and children have some pretty intense differences of opinion. Immediately, Jesus reached out his hand and caught me. There were a lot of emergency prayers, and those continue to this day. Some of you know my daughter is currently living in the midst of a simmering civil conflict in Nicaragua, struggling to teach the subjects she did worst in during high school to a group of high school students who use Spanish and sign language. There's been a bit of praying in our house, and you are very welcome to join in those prayers. Then there were the everyday prayers, blessings on food and bedtime prayers modeled on the Lord's Prayer. Some of the sweetest moments of parenthood happened during the bedtime routine. Splashy fun at bath time, cute little clean kids in pajamas, sharing stories, praying together. How lovely to close the day with the comforting routine awareness that God is there on the night shift just as much as during the day. And I developed another routine of praying silently for my children as I watched them in their beds or just outside their door after saying goodnight. That prayer developed slowly over many nights. This was the deep prayer, the lifetime prayer. Yes, I prayed for their daily struggles and I prayed for their futures, but I felt the need for a bottom line prayer, one I could be absolutely confident that God would say yes to. I had already had lots of experience with no. Unbeknownst to us, Tess was born with a medical issue that prevented her sleeping well. Despite everything we tried, and believe me, we tried everything, she continued to nap randomly around the clock. She was 17 months old the first time she slept through the night, if you count 5 hours as through the night. There are a lot of hours in the middle of the night available for prayer when your baby can't sleep. And it was not something God chose to change very quickly. Every sleepless night felt like a no. So I knew that not all prayers are answered in the way we want or at the time we want. But I also knew that God is faithful and present and that he can give me the strength I need to endure what I have to. In 1 John 5, 14 and 15, we read, "This is the confidence we have in approaching God, that if we ask anything according to his will, he hears us. And if we know that he hears us, whatever we ask, we know that we have what we asked of him." So I began to reduce my long prayers for my child into only asking for the things that I was pretty sure were in God's will, were absolutely in God's will. I began with gratitude for my child. No matter how frustrating the day, I was still very grateful to have them. I couldn't resist putting in at least a request for safety. And then I focused on the things that matter most: godly character, a loving relationship with God, and meaningful work in God's kingdom. I know that it is God's will that we be like him. I know that we are here to love God. And I know that we are here to serve him and through that to care for our fellow people in the world. So this is the prayer that I silently said each night. Dear God, I thank you for Tess. I ask that she will grow up to be a godly woman who loves and serves you. And at the right time, I was blessed to be able to begin praying, Dear God, I thank you for Ben. I ask that he'll grow up to be a godly man who loves and serves you. Very simple, very heartfelt prayers, and God is working out his answers daily in their lives. I know I said there'd be things for everyone in this. Let me generalize it a bit. When we were commanded to pray without ceasing, I think this is part of what God was talking about. Many kinds of prayer that each have their purposes. Outpourings of worship and gratitude for the blessings we've been given. Emergency prayers that remind us of our dependence on God, our fortress and help in trouble. Daily routine prayers that keep us in touch with God and make the everyday moments sacred. And then that deep prayer that we can pray for those we love and for ourselves. We thank you for our lives, God. We ask that you will cause us to grow up and grow deep. Lord, please work in us to make us godly people who love you and serve you. This is all we ask and all we need. Amen.
can hardly believe that I couldn't get up on. I can hardly believe that I couldn't get up on a platform. I used to go up 3 stairs at a time chasing my children. And when I see my grandson go the same, I say, oh, you're trying to show off to me. Anyway, dear church, I have some very happy mother news that I want to give to you in preface of my little talk today, which is going to cut into the time a bit. Last night, my son, Jamie, who has been, as it were, lost. He was once a dear a little Christian boy, and he said to me, Mother, do you want me to send you a Mother's Day card or tell you that I've come back to the Lord? And I said, oh, dear God. I said, well, forget the card. I'm so glad. And so what happier announcement could an old mother get? There's something about motherhood that once you're into it, you never really leave it. They're kind of always there. And they go out and come back in droves, and like great-grandchildren. So we've got lots to pray for, as Colleen was saying. It's not just our own children, but it's our children's children. And so we love them all, and we get so annoyed with them sometimes. Sometimes, you know, you wish they'd go away. Have you ever had that experience? Oh, so I got to a place where all I wanted to do is sit in my chair and wish everybody'd go away. But that isn't the case. I found that it was in motherhood that the Lord was able to bring me to my lowest place. We can, as Christians, be self-made. We're supposed to be self-made and cooperators with God, but there's something still receiving the glory in what we have done. And we've been studying in the Philippians about God working in us. And Vic, the day you said that wonderful verse a few months ago, we're still in that same chapter, I think, aren't we? I think it's in that chapter. For it is God that worketh in you, both to will and to do his good pleasure. And I've heard that verse for years, and I've read it. But there's suddenly, when you spoke it, I just thought, Lord, you that hath begun a good work in Jamie will perform it. My faith sort of took hold of a positive thing. And it's we that let go of God, not that he lets go of us. There was some real encouragement in that. The Lord ministered life to me there. So I kept praying for him. He phones me every night from his, they call it a dugout, where they take the truck in. And this is when he announced this last night. And I thought, oh, dear Lord, your faithfulness is so great. Now, the stories, I'm going back a little bit now just to motherhood. The types of children that God gave me were very busy. Like, I guess you'd call them hyper. At least they seemed that way to me. Where you're always up all night or day with them. There was somebody either sick or needing mother help. And when your hands are on them, you don't have that assistance. Father did try to help, but he needed his sleep, so he got first choice. Anyway, I was sitting in my kitchen. They were all dressed, ready to go out, and I was too tired to take them out. And I just laid my head back, and I said, Dear Lord, I said, send help. And all of a sudden, a knock came to the front door. And I said, and the kids all jumped. Of course, they love answering the front door. And when I got there, there was a dear Christian lady from West Point Grey Baptist, Mrs. Grange. I said, oh, Mrs. Grange. She said, well, I was just passing by your house, And I wondered if you'd like me to take the children out for an hour to the park. I said, Lord, I can hardly believe this. So I explained to her, I said, you know, the prayer has hardly gone off my lips. Send help, and look what he sent you. And she was a dear lady, one of those very stalwart kinds. You could see her leading pioneer girls, you know, that could really handle a situation. So I knew that I could trust it. No little frail lady would have done. She had to have some strength and ability to run. So anyway, that was the day God taught me how your simplest prayer. See, we know that. We read it in the Word. Call upon me and I will answer. And so very often I'll do it myself. But it was brought low. I had to be so tired that I had asked God for this help. And the other instance was, I didn't bring any notes and see if I can remember it. You know, I just got stage fright. Yes, and Carrie told me I should make notes. But it was a good story, and I wish I could remember. Vic, does this ever happen to you?
I make notes.
Oh. See, I didn't learn the lesson. I thought I was too smart and I could remember. Anyway, it was rather an important story too. But maybe another time, on another Mother's Day, I will tell you.
We have the lights turned off as we watch this video. Oh, not right now. One of the basics required to be a mom is to give birth, to give life. And the next video speaker that we have is a woman who is going to talk about pro-life. And I decided to show this video in part because I think that during Mother's Day and Father's Day, there are many people that have a real difficult time coming out even to a Sunday service because of the topic itself. They have not had very positive experiences with motherhood and with mothers and fathers. And the reason I decided to show this video is not just because of her passion for life as a gift from God, but also because she's a woman of hope, and she found hope in her foster mom and eventually found hope in Jesus Christ. So I just wanted you to get an opportunity to listen to this very special lady.
I'm adopted, and my biological mother was 17, and so was my biological father. She was 7.5 months pregnant when she decided to go to Planned Parenthood, which is the largest abortion provider in the world, and they counseled her to have a late-term saline abortion, which is a saline salt solution that is injected into the mother's womb. The baby gulps that solution, it burns the baby inside and out, and then she is to deliver a dead baby within 24 hours, and to everyone's great shock and surprise, I didn't arrive dead, but alive on April the 6th, 1977, in a Los Angeles County abortion clinic. What's fantastic about this, about the perfect timing of my arrival, is that the abortionist was not on duty yet. So he wasn't even given the opportunity to continue on with his plan for my life, which was death. And I know that I am in a government building, and a beautiful one it is, and I love your country as well as my own. But I know in the age that we live in, it is not at all politically correct to say the name of Jesus Christ in places like this, to bring him into these sorts of meetings, because his name can make people so terribly uncomfortable. But I didn't survive so I could make everyone comfortable. I survived so I could stir things up a bit. And I have a great time doing it. And so I was delivered alive, as I've already said, after 18 hours. I should be blind, I should be burned, I should be dead. And yet I'm not. You know what is fantastic vindication is the fact that the abortionist had to sign my birth certificate. So I know who he is. And it also says, for any skeptic listening, on my medical records, born during saline abortion. Ha! They didn't win. I've done some research on the man that performed the abortion on me. And his clinics are the largest chain of clinics in the United States of America, and they gross $70 million a year. I read a quote from him at some point several years ago, and he said, "I have aborted over 1 million babies, and I consider it my passion." I tell you these things because, listen, ladies and gentlemen, we are in an interesting battle, whether we realize it or not, in this world. It is a battle between life and death. What side are you on? So a nurse called an ambulance and had me transferred to a hospital, which is absolutely miraculous. Generally, the practice at the time and up until 2002 was, in my country, was to end the life of an abortion survivor by strangulation, suffocation, leaving the baby there to die, or throwing the baby away. But on August the 5th, 2002, my extraordinary President Bush signed into law the Born Alive Infants Protection Act to prevent that from occurring anymore. You see, we're playing for keeps. We're playing for, I mean, I'm hoping to be hated by the time that I die so that I can feel God about me and understand what it was to be hated. I mean, he was hated. Christ was hated. And not that I look forward to being hated, but I know along my journey, I know I'm already hated because I declare life. I say, you didn't get me. The silent Holocaust didn't win over me. And my mission, ladies and gentlemen, among many things is this: to infuse humanity into a debate that we have just compartmentalized and set on a shelf and said it is an issue. We have removed our emotions. We are becoming harder. Do you really want that? How much are you willing to take, and how much are you willing to risk to speak the truth in love and graciousness and stand up and at least be willing to be hated? Or at the end of the day, is it all about you? Or me? And so, after that, I was placed in an emergency foster care home. where they decided they didn't like me very well, and as I'm fond of saying, I don't know how you could not adore me right from the start. What is wrong with these people? But they didn't. You see, I've been hated since conception. By so many, and loved by so many more, but most especially by God. I'm his girl. You don't mess with God's girl. I got a sign on my forehead that says, you better be nice to me because my father runs the world. So after I was placed in the mean home, I was taken out of the mean home and placed into another home, a beautiful home, Penny's home. And she said by this time I was 17 months old, 32 pounds of dead weight, and diagnosed with what I considered to be the gift of cerebral palsy, which was caused directly by the lack of oxygen to my brain while I was trying to survive. Now, I am just compelled to say this. If abortion is merely about women's rights, ladies and gentlemen, then what were mine? There was not a radical feminist standing up and yelling about how my rights were being violated that day. In fact, my life was being snuffed out in the name of women's rights. And ladies and gentlemen, I would not have cerebral palsy had I not survived all of this. So when I hear the appalling, disgusting argument that we should have abortions because the child just might be disabled, oh, the horror that fills my heart. Ladies and gentlemen, there are things that you will only be able to learn by the weakest among us. And when you snuff them out, you are the one that loses. The Lord looks after them, but you are the one that will suffer forever. And what arrogance, what absolute arrogance, and it has been an argument for so long in this human place that we live, that the stronger should dominate the weaker, should determine who lives or dies. The arrogance of that, don't you realize that you cannot make your own heart beat? Don't you realize that all the power that you think you possess, you really possess none of it? It is the mercy of God that sustains you, even when you hate him. So they looked at my dear Penny and they said, Gianna will never be anything, which is always encouraging. And she decided to ignore them, and she worked with me 3 times a day, and I began to hold up my head, and I said, well, Gianna will never this and never that. Long story shorter, I was walking by the age of 3 and a half with a walker and leg braces, and I stand up here today with a mild little limp and without a walker and leg braces. I fall gracefully sometimes and very ungracefully at other times, depending on the situation, but I consider it all for the glory of God. You see, ladies and gentlemen, I am weaker than most of you, but this is my sermon. And what a small price to pay to be able to blaze through the world as I do and offer hope. And I think in our misunderstanding of the way things work, we misunderstand how beautiful suffering can be. I don't willingly sign up for it, but when it comes, we forget that God is in control and God has a way of making the most miserable thing beautiful. I have met my biological mother. I have forgiven my biological mother. I am a Christian. She's a very broken woman. She came to an event I was having 2 years ago, showed up unannounced, and said, hello, I'm your mother. and it was a very difficult day. And yet, while I was enduring all of this, you'll probably think I'm silly, but I was sitting there and I was thinking, I don't belong to you. I belong to Christ. I'm his girl, and I'm a princess. So no matter what you say, in all your anger and brokenness and rage, it's not mine to keep. It's not mine to carry, and I won't. I was saying all this inside. So ladies and gentlemen, you have an opportunity. But for just a brief moment, I would like to speak directly to the men in this room and do something that is never done. Men, you are made for greatness. You are made to stand up and be men. You are made to defend women and children, not stand by and turn your head when you know murder is occurring and do nothing about it. You are not made to use women and leave us alone. You are made to be kind and great and gracious and strong and stand for something. Because men, listen to me, I am too tired to do your job. Women, you are not made for abuse. You are not made to sit and not know your worth and your value. You are made to be fought for forever. So now is your moment. What sort of people are you going to be? I trust incredible. I trust, men, you will rise to the occasion. To the politicians listening, particularly to the men, I would say this: you are made for greatness, set your politics aside. You are made to defend what is right and good. This fiery young girl will stand here and say, now's your moment. What sort of man do you want to be? A man obsessed with your own glory, or a man obsessed with the glory of God? It's time to take a stand, Victoria. This is your hour. God will assist you. God will be with you. You have the opportunity to glorify and honor God in 2008. I'll just end with this. Some of you might be slightly annoyed that all I keep doing is talking about God and Jesus. But how on earth can I walk about limping through this world and not give all my heart and mind and soul and strength to the Christ who gave me life? So if you think I'm a fool, it's just another jewel in my crown. My whole intent in living here is to make God smile. I hope some of this made sense. It just came from my heart. God bless and keep you.
I'm going to ask Colleen to come up, and she's going to pray for the mums and lead us in prayer.
Please pray with me. God, we so often think of you as Father, and we understand that you are also our mother. At the same time, you are the parent. You are the one who created us in your image. And Father, I pray for all of the mothers here who are struggling to live as your image bearers, who are struggling to be what you want them to be. Father, I pray that you would give the wisdom, the grace, the courage, the strength that each of us needs as a mother. Father, I bring to you all of those here who are in pain because of this issue of motherhood, whether it is that they wanted to be a mother and that was not the path you chose for them, whether it is that there's a disruption in their relationship with their children or with their mother, whether it is just the difficulties of day-to-day life and trying to figure out how to guide our children and allow you to be their God. I just pray that you would give us all the comfort and the courage and the strength. Father, for those who have lost a child, for those who have lost a mother, we ask that you would just bring comfort, that you would be very close, that you would help us to remember the good memories, to come to terms with the bad memories, to figure out how we are to go forward from here and what we can learn from these relationships. Lord, I just pray that you would be very close to each mother here and that you would strengthen the relationship between us and our own mothers, that we would all glorify you in the way that we live these very precious relationships. In your name we pray. Amen.